Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10. The Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions, text 37 to 40. Praja Patin Munan Manun Devan Rishin Pitri Ganan Pritak Siddha Charna Gandharva Vidyadhara,
Vidyadhara,
Asura,
Asura,
Guyakan,
Guyakan,
Prajapatin Manun Devan,
Prajapatin Manun Devan,
Rishin Pitri Ganan Prita,
Rishin Pitri Ganan Prita,
Siracharna Gandharvan,
Siracharna Gandharvan,
Vidyadrasura Guyakan,
Vidyadrasura Guyakan,
Prajapatin Manun Devan,
Prajapatin Manun Devan,
Rishin Pitri Ganan Prita,
Rishin Pitri Ganan Prita,
Siracharna Gandharvan,
Siracharna Gandharvan,
Vidyadrasura Guyakan,
Vidyadrasura Guyakan,
Prajapatin,
Prajapatin,
Brahma and his sons like Daksha and others, Manum, superior article heads like Vaivashvata Manu, Devan, like Indra, Chandra, and Varuna. Rishin, like Bhrigu and Vashistha. Pitringanam, the inhabitants of the Pitta planets. Pritak, separately. Siddha, an inhabitants of the Siddha planet. Charna, the inhabitants of the Charna planet. Gandharvan, the inhabitants of the Gandharva planets. Vidyadhara, the inhabitants of the Vidyadhara planet. Asura,
the atheist.
Guyakan,
the
inhabitants of the Yaksha planet. And the verse goes on. Kinara Sarasonagan Sarpan Kimpurushanaram Matri Raksha Pusha Tamscha Preta Buddha Vinayakan Kushmando Mud Dhammara Vetalam Yatu Danan Grahanapi Kagan Rigan Pashun Rikshan Girin Ripa Sarish Ripan Dvividas Chaturvida Yenye Dalastalala na bhokshaka kushat la kushala rishan karmanam guta katayas tvima. So this mentions all, let's go through the words for word here. Kinara, the inhabitants of the Kinara planet. Apsara, the beautiful angels of the Apsara planet. Nagan, the serpentine inhabitants of Naga Loka. Sarapan, the inhabitants of Sarpaloka.
Inhabitants of Sarpaloka.
Snakes. Kim Purushan.
Kim Purushan.
The monkey-shaped inhabitants of the Kim Purusha planet. Narang.
Narang.
Inhabitants of Earth.
Inhabitants of Earth.
Matri.
Matri.
The inhabitants of Matri Loka.
Inhabitants of Matri Loka.
Raksha.
Raksha.
Inhabitants of the dynamic. The inhabitants of the demoniac planet.
The inhabitants of the demoniac planet.
Pishachan.
Pishachan.
The inhabitants of Pishachakaloka.
Inhabitants of Pishachakaloka.
Cha.
Also.
Preta.
Preta.
The inhabitants of Preta Loka.
The inhabitants of Preta.
Buddha.
The evil spirits.
Vinayakam.
Vinayakam.
The goblins.
Goblins.
Kushmanda.
Kushmanda.
Will of the wisp.
Unmada.
Unmada.
Lunatics.
Somebody's like describing this planet. Vetalan.
Vetalan.
The jinn. Yatudanam,
Yatudanam,
a particular type of evil spirit.
Graham,
the good and evil stars.
Api,
also.
Kagam,
the birds.
Mrigam,
the forest animals.
Pashun,
the household animals.
Rikshan,
the goats. Rich means tree. It's not. Rich actually means tree.
Girin.
Girin. The mountains.
Mountains.
Ripa.
Ripa.
O king.
O king.
Sarij. Sarij. No. Sarij. Spree. Sari Sprishpan.
Sari Sprishpan.
Reptiles.
Reptiles.
Vivida.
Vivida.
The moving and the standing living entities.
Moving and standing living entities.
Chatu Vida.
Chatu Vida.
The living entities born from embryos, eggs, perspiration, and seeds. Yea, others. Anye, all. Jala, water. Stala, land. Nava Oshaka, birds. Kushala, and happiness. Akushala, in distress. Mishra,
Mishra,
the mixed happiness and distress.
Karmanam,
according to one's own past deeds.
Gataya,
as a result of.
To,
but.
Ima,
all of them.
All of them.
Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O King, know for me that all of the entities are created by the Supreme Lord according to their past deeds. This includes Brahma and his sons like Daksha, the periodical heads like Vaivashvata Manu, the demigods like Indra, Chandra, and Varuna, the great sages like Bhrigu, Vyas, and Vashista, the inhabitants of Pitriloka and Siddhaloka, the Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Asuras, Yakshas, Kanara, and angels, the serpentines, the monkey-shaped Kim Purushas, the human beings, the inhabitants of Matri Loka, the demons, the Pishachas, ghosts, spirits, lunatics, and evil spirits, the good and evil stars, the goblins, and the animals in the forest, the birds, the household animals, the reptiles, the mountains, the moving and standing living entities, living entities born from embryos, from eggs, from perspiration, or from seeds, and all others, whether they be in the water, land, or sky, and happiness and distress, or mixed happiness and distress, all of them according to their past deeds are created by the Supreme Lord. Purport. the varieties of living entities are mentioned in this list, and with no exception, from the topmost planet down to the lowest planet of the universe, all of them in different species of life are created by the Almighty Father Vishnu. Therefore, no one is independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita 14.4, the Lord therefore claims all of the entities as his offspring in the following verse. Sarvayonashi kondeya mortayak sambhavantiya tasa drama mahadyonir ahambiga pradapita. Material nature is compared to the mother, although every living being is seen to come out of the mother's body. It is still a fact that the mother is not the ultimate cause of such a birth. The father is the ultimate cause of birth. Without the father's seed, no mother can give birth to a child. Therefore, the living being in different varieties of forms and positions within the innumerable universes were all born of the seeds of the Almighty Father, Personality of Godhead, and only to the man with a poor fund of knowledge they appear to be born of the material nature. Being under the material energy of the Supreme Lord, all living entities beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant are manifested in different bodies according to their past deeds. Material nature is one of the energies of the Lord, Bhagavad Gita 7.4. Material nature is inferior in comparison to the living entities, the superior nature. Superior nature and the inferior nature of the Lord combine to manifest all universal affairs. Some of the living entities are relatively happy in better conditions of life, where others are in a distressed conditions of life, but factually none of them are actually happy in material conditional life. No one can be happy in prison life, although one may be a first-class prisoner, another a third-class prisoner. The intelligent person should not try to be promoted from third-class prison life to first-class prison life, but should try to be released from the prison altogether. One may be promoted to the first-class prisoner, but the same first-class prisoner is again degraded to the third-class prisoner in the next term. One should try to be free from prison life and go back home, back to Godhead. That is the real goal for all types of living entities. Namo Vishnu Vrai Krishna Prasthai Vidai Srimati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanavane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishe Shashin Vadi Paskatya Devita. There are two ways of looking at the verse, or of course there are many ways of looking at the verse, but one way is that evolution is not really the process by which the living entities take different forms. Currently in the material society, there is a faith, which is more or less the current religion, in this process of gradual evolution of the species. The idea is that human society is just one of the progressions that have been taking place over millions and millions of years or billions of years and has culminated in Western civilization. And the capital of that is New York City. And probably the climax of that was the Twin Towers. So when the terrorists attacked the Twin Towers, they were not only attacking some buildings, but they were attacking the very symbol of progress, of evolution, of billions of years, culminating the biggest buildings in the world. What's that? Yes, all by accident. Maybe it was just an accident. In any case, this is the current viewpoint, and so-called supported by scientific evidence. Of course, one point about the evolutionary theory is that they don't quite have a theory. No one really knows how everything evolved. And one of the points is that they have no intermediary species of life. In other words, what is between one form of life and another. What is the in-between between a monkey and a human being? That was a common one. Monkeys, chimpanzees, gorillas, they're different from most human beings. So what are the different species, if they evolve, and how do they evolve? So this the scientists can point out. There's no missing links. And if we look at the fossil record in paleontology, we look at the Earth, we don't find any missing links there. Nor do we find any consistent record of one species gradually developing. In the book Forbidden Archaeology, we'll find that if we take all the evidence together, we'll find out there is no evidence for evolution. There's evidence against evolution. That there is no consistent progression. On the other hand, apparently advanced human beings live simultaneously for millions, if not hundreds of millions, if not billions of years, simultaneously with lower species of life. And science, which is supposed to be based upon observation, if that is a fact, then it's supposed to be scientific. There are different types of knowledge known as pratyaksha, anuman, and shruti, which are the principal types of knowledge that we accept. There are other types of knowledge also. Historic custom is also a type of knowledge. But scientific knowledge is based primarily upon anuman and pratyaksha, observable evidence, and then inferring something from that observable evidence. But if we take the fossil records, then there's no observable evidence for evolution. So where did it come from? And they have no mechanism also. In other words, if something was to be evolved, if we're going to have faith in something is evolved, there must be some way that it evolved. Just like who will have faith that a wristwatch will gradually evolve into a clock on the wall? Has anyone ever seen that? Or can anyone conceive how our wristwatch, if you leave it long enough, gradually will evolve into a clock on the wall? No, no one will have any faith, because there's no way we can conceive of how it's going to happen. And no one has ever seen it done. So similarly, no one has ever seen evolution take place. Now, of course, they had this fly, a fruit fly, and they thought maybe we can prove it with a fruit fly. And there was one man, he spent years trying to change the number of whiskers on a fruit fly. I don't know if he's still alive or what his next birth was. He was meditating for many, many years. He changed the number of fruit flies, their whiskers, on the fruit fly. If it's of any interest to the devotees here. It went from 32 to 56. So he's quite successful in his endeavor. I don't know if he got the Nobel Prize for it. But what was interesting, he couldn't get the number above 56. That was it. And then when he let the fruit flies by themselves, they just evolved back. In other words, each successive generation just went back to the same number of whiskers that they started out with, 32. Therefore, this idea that by radiation, mutation, whatever else, then you can get different species, no one has ever done that. And even when you do that, even if there are mutations, generally they're quite unfavorable for the survival of the species. And even if you left, these mutations are left to themselves, successive generations just come back to the same original form of the species. Therefore, they have no observable evidence that there was evolution. They have no mechanism by which evolution will take place. And therefore, it's a very unscientific philosophy. She wrote a book in Austria. Simply based upon speculation. But the whole modern society is all based upon that there is no God. In other words, the first business of modern society is to become atheistic, to try to eliminate the Creator. But they've been very unsuccessful at doing that. What they've been successful is brainwashing people into thinking that they've done it. And of course, to prove it, they have museums of big, big dinosaurs. Of course, how true these dinosaurs are. I mean, they may have been dinosaurs someplace on the earth, and there still may be dinosaurs. Sariputta was saying that still people see dinosaurs in different parts of the world. But even what we conceive of the dinosaurs is not exactly necessarily true. Just like they take a little bone that big and they make a dinosaur the size of the room. I saw on one magazine it was saying that some of these dinosaurs they thought were carnivorous, now they think were herbivorous. So they make up a whole story behind it. They take a little bone that big, make a huge dinosaur out of it, and describe everything about it. Its food, where it used to sleep, you know, its relationship to the other dinosaurs, you know, everything. You know, with the film. And so, they made dinosaurs. Matter of fact, sometimes they've seen, for instance, there was a huge dinosaur that supposedly lived in the ocean that was extinct for hundreds of millions of years, and they saw it swimming in the ocean. Some people saw it swimming in the ocean. So undoubtedly, there's maybe some truth. They uncover these huge elephants. What are they called, those huge elephants? Mammoths. And under different circumstances, you know, with fresh grass in their mouth or whatever. So there are many species of life that we haven't seen. It is not that we know everything. But it's not that simply by finding one little bone we can create a whole story about what happened millions and millions of years ago. We don't even know what's going on here now. We have no idea, even the life on this planet. There are so many stories in America of Bigfoot, and people have seen Bigfoot, some kind of huge half-man-like or man-like creature, huge man-like, and people have seen it. But because it doesn't fit into the present understanding of evolution, therefore, even people have seen it, they haven't really seen it. Because like I said yesterday, one man who was very famous in the 1800s, 1850 or something, he had some mystic power. He could manifest things out of nothing, seemingly nothing. He could actually float above the air. And scientists would actually observe him and write about it. But although they saw it and reported about it, but no one believed them. Just like in Brazil, Sridhar Maharaj was saying he went there and he saw personally one man, this man, his Jesus, doing psychic operations. He'd just take his hand and put it into the body of the person and bring out different things from the body. But although many, many scientists have observed it, still it's not possible, according to them. So it's supposedly based on observation. Even they observe, they don't believe. They only believe what fits in to their current understanding, their current perspective on things. So this certainly is not worthy of being called science. Nor is it the only way of actually understanding things. So here, the Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining that many varieties of species that we don't observe. But that doesn't mean that they don't exist. Just like we may not observe the person who created this building, but that doesn't mean he didn't exist. But because we can infer his existence due to the fact that it was logically, intelligently put together, and therefore we understand that matter left by itself doesn't evolve, it devolves. There's some law called entropy. Entropy means matter left to itself becomes more random, not more organized. Therefore, when we find organization, we understand that there is intelligence behind it. We may not see that intelligence, but we understand it must be there. The sun moves in its orbit exactly on time, not by chance, but because there's an intelligent sun god who moves it. Previously, to a few hundred years ago, the whole world believed in these things. The early philosophers, religionists, scientists, they all had faith that there are an order to life. They had nature gods, they had personal gods, they had good fairies. These things were not just like mythology or childish, but people actually had faith in these things, that there was an actual order to life. And then around the time of William Shakespeare, they started to question whether there was any order to life. So many Shakespeare's plays, we find that there is different personalities who are challenging the current held understanding of life. Like in William Shakespeare, we find, what is that? The faulty of Brutus lies not in ourselves. It lies in ourselves, not in our stars, that we are underlings. So this, I think that was from Caesar. That's where the famous verse comes from William Shakespeare. Friends, Romans, and countrymen, lend me your ears. And a few dollars, too. So, people actually, this is being challenged, whether there was any order to life, any order to society, whether the kings had a natural right to rule, because they were just in the order, therefore they had the right. So William Shakespeare, he was on the side that actually there was divine right of kings and people, there was an order to society. In other words, the breakdown in this conception of order in society is not simply a philosophical or scientific, as a result of philosophical and scientific understanding, it's actually the result of an emotional crisis that people are going through. An economic, emotional crisis that people were going through, that the higher order, that they thought was the higher order, had betrayed them, was exploiting them. Therefore, they started to question whether the kings had divine right to rule. In other words, whether Krishna actually put them there. When Sanatana Goswami was studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, the emperor came. Nawab Hussein Shah, not exactly a very, he didn't come to study the Bhagavatam. He came in order to get Sanatana Goswami to go back to take care of the management of the kingdom so that he could go to Orissa and attack Jagannath Puri so he could destroy Lord Jagannath. So of course Sanatana Goswami was not exactly enthusiastic about this. Therefore didn't actually appreciate the Nawab's intentions very much. But still when the Nawab came, he stood up along with all the Brahmins and offered him respect because they understood that he was actually the representative of Krishna. Similarly, when Nawab had asked Sanatana Goswami about Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami told the Nawab that simply think about it yourself and Krishna will give you the intelligence to understand who is Lord Chaitanya, because you're Krishna's representative in the form of a king. In other words, it is not by accident that someone is king. It is not some misfortune, it is not, of course it may be a misfortune, but things are arranged by the laws of nature. But people, at least around the time of William Shakespeare, they started to question this. How is it that these kings are exploiting us? How could God have put a king in position to exploit us? We're all so nice, and all my friends are nice, and my relatives are nice. So how can such nice people get exploited by such bad kings? So they rearranged their philosophy in order to suit their particular perspective on life. And now in current society, we find the same thing. How bad things happen to good people. as you know, the person who wrote that book, his theory was that God is a nice person, but he's become very old. Matter of fact, he's become so old that he's become senile. And therefore, although he's trying hard to make nice arrangements for people, sometimes because he's senile, he makes the wrong arrangements, and therefore sometimes bad things happen to good people. And sometimes good things happen to bad people. But don't worry because the old man is about to retire and maybe one of the archangels will take over and things will go better in the future. So this, of course, is extended that so many theories about God, some speculation, and eventually they thought it would be better to take the old man out of the picture entirely. Just make a completely mechanistic viewpoint of the world and things will go better. This is called humanism. That you're a good person, not if you're a follower of God, some mythological God, you're a good person if you put food into people's stomachs. That's what makes you a good person. But of course, this is not really based upon observation. It's simply based upon people's sentiments. And according to their sentiments, they've created a philosophy. And according to that philosophy, that's how they see things. So on the other hand, if we change our philosophy, then we'll change the way we see things. Just like when we gave this class to another audience, people would think I was crazy to say such things. But because we have a certain philosophy, therefore we tend to see things through that philosophy. And what is it ultimately based upon? It's based upon what actually works for us. What works for us is what makes us happy and what doesn't make us happy. In other words, if our philosophy ultimately didn't make us happy, we wouldn't accept the philosophy either. Or we could say, because modern philosophy, based upon this whole mechanistic understanding of things, hasn't made people happy, therefore that's why you find so many Hare Krishnas, and potential Hare Krishnas. Because it hasn't really satisfied people. That if you can simply get a car, then your whole life is successful. And what to speak if you can pay for it. And then if you could live in a building where doesn't fall down or no one burglarizes it, then you're actually quite happy, peaceful. And the ultimate, the highest goal in life is to somehow or another fill the stomach up. Then you're really a successful person. And if you can fill up more than one stomach, then you're actually a very important person. Then you've actually, we found out the secrets of life. So this type of philosophy hasn't really satisfied people. And therefore, people are wondering what's going on. There are some, although officially everyone believes in a certain thing, but no one really believes it. So many people who are scientists, they also believe in psychic powers and all kinds of things. Although officially everything is supposed to be mechanistic, still no one really accepts, most people don't really accept such a mechanistic theory of life. Just like my mother, she has no faith in the Supreme Being, but she believes in astrology. How that works is kind of how it works. That everything is so organized that subtly things are being planned out. And yet there's no understanding of that there's a planner behind it. So this is only due to the inconceivable workings of the illusory energy. And then on the other hand, the whole question is here, where are we going to be happy? So even those who have some faith in some kind of plan behind nature or whatever, some intelligence, they think that we can become happier if we become like the gods. We trace back when people actually had faith in a plan, and intelligent people planning material nature, they generally thought, like the Greeks and the Romans, that there were some demigods behind things. And they thought the highest goal in life was to become like a demigod, the immortals. and be able to control, you know, people's destinies. That will bring one happiness. In other words, first of all, to understand that there is some plan behind material nature is only one step. The next thing is to understand what is the actual plan. The plan is not to simply become more powerful in material nature. The actual plan is to get out of material nature. But people won't be able to understand that. First, we have to convince them that there's a plan behind nature. If they don't believe that there's a plan and planner behind, or planners behind nature, why will they want to get out of nature? And to go where? So there are different levels of understanding. That the material level, the subtle level, the material higher levels of material nature. So this is all explained here, all the different bodies, all the way up to the progenitors. And then all the way beyond them, Prajapatis, all the way up to the Brahman effulgence, and through that to Vaikuntha, all the way to Krishna Loka. And what is the actual desirable or undesirable positions that the living entity can be placed? And why the living entity is placed in different bodies, in different circumstances, in different atmospheres? So of course the presence, understanding things, that everything goes on by accident, has so much infused our brains that we don't care what we do. We think it doesn't really matter, try a little Hare Krishna or, you know, this or that, it doesn't really matter. Because, you know, what, there is no real, I can do this and do that, and I won't get any reaction for it. So the whole society is bewildered by these things. Therefore, everything goes. Make an experiment with anything, any kind of sex life, any kind of intoxication, any kind of eating, anything goes. Just experiment and see what's good for you. And don't worry about the future, because the future is you're going to be dead, and that's it. Or don't worry about the future because you've accepted Lord Jesus in your heart, and therefore whatever you do is alright, because you've been saved. So this mechanistic, atheistic, demoniac philosophy that is currently within a society which we've been trained up, which has more or less affected our brains also, is really the cause of people acting whimsically in so many different ways, and the result is the whole society is gliding down into the mode of more and more of ignorance. And the result of ignorance is madness, delusion, all kinds of things. We read in the Bhagavad Gita, what is the result of degradation? It's not evolution. Anyone can see how things have become degraded with this philosophy. They don't evolve consciousness. Actually, they're degrading. Just like in the mode of ignorance, mudra grihinatmano yat vidaya kriyate tapa parasyat savanatam vata tamusamudarita. So that's austerity in the mode of ignorance. So, muda, of course, means foolishness. Grihinatmano yat. So, austerity which is done foolishly to injure others with no regulation, etc., etc. So these people, for instance, who blew up these buildings, they went through austerity to do it. To learn how to fly the planes and get into America, to do all these things, to fly into the building, requires some austerity. But it's austerity in the mode of ignorance. Their whole idea was just to injure others. So what kind of, that's evolution? No, actually, it's degradation. So we look at the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion described in the Bhagavad Gita, which is a very simple form. We'll find that people are actually devolving. They're going back into the lower species of life. Rather than actually taking to the proper culture, the proper understanding of things, and therefore taking to the proper culture, and engaging their senses in the proper way so they actually evolve. Senses including the mind, evolve towards the higher realms of existence. So this is what's being offered in the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam, the different understands what life is all about, and one can wave for themselves, everyone can wave for themselves, and see whether you want to accept Darwin and become a monkey, or you want to accept the Bhagavatam and become, you know, go back to the spiritual world. So, we may not be able to see all these different species of life, but we can infer them from our experience, and we can understand that why some people accept the lower species of life, and why people get the higher species of life, and therefore make our plans accordingly. So that takes some knowledge, and therefore that's what the Bhagavatam is giving us. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
So we accept a certain philosophy that is happening. So in my personal case, I saw the Bhagavad Gita. I read it. I saw, I had some feeling that will make me happy. Indeed, it did. But why not so many people?
Because people have a different taste. The mode of ignorance. One becomes too affected by the mode of ignorance. Then one thinks, dharma itiya manite tamasavritaha sarvatan viparitamstra buddhisaparta tamasi. So intelligence and mode of ignorance, one thinks religion to be irreligion, and religion to be irreligion. Under the spell of illusion darkness, one always strives in the wrong direction. So people covered by ignorance, they don't know, they can't see, they're blind to what will actually make them happy. The very cause of the distress they're hankering for, and what will actually will make them free them from distress, they're averse to. So that's ignorance. Some people, because they've become so much affected by it, therefore they're bewildered. They think the whole philosophy is just feed the empty belly with something that tastes good. And if you get a little strength and have some sex life, that will make you happy. That's the whole purpose of modern society. And if you try and convince people about that, they have no brains to understand these things. They think anything beyond that is just speculation. You know, we're aspiring devotees. So aspiring devotee means that we're affected by the modes of nature. But by the process, we're becoming purified, so gradually we can come to the mode of goodness and then understand things properly. So of course, these things are so striking. This philosophy is so striking when it's presented systematically and logically that we can understand that, you know, that there is reason and logic behind it, and therefore some of our irrational understanding of things will gradually dissipate. Yeah, irrational. And then the result will be that we'll correct our habits, which are based upon, you know, an irrational understanding of things. Namely, you know, that it's all right, I can do whatever gratifies my senses is all right, because, you know, for whatever reason we think it's all right. But gradually we understand how stringent things work, how the laws of material nature are so exacting, then we'll become more cautious. And ultimately we'll understand that my real goal in life is just to fix, the only real protection and happiness is to fix my mind upon Krishna. Everything else is practically irrelevant. And it's only relevant if you can help me do that. Relevant or valuable if it can actually help me fix my mind upon Krishna. So that will take some understanding. And gradually we'll get there. Just by associating with Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Yes? Yeah, we accept Bhagavad Gita is a little bit more elevated than Shakespeare. Yeah, that we accept. Anything else? Yes. Okay.
I'd like to have a
Because Lord Chaitanya asked them to do it. So even they torture everyone else, if Krishna tells you to do it, then you do it. They got authorization. Yes. Maybe, I don't know.